You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Day for Christopher. Yes, I'm referring to myself in the third person because that's how tired I am.
Man, it's been a good day for the boy John over here.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that, John. Because you're
is that the weed sound?
Is that the weed sound? You want to admit that on mic? Okay,
I didn't do anything.
Yeah, feel free. Oh, I got. Yeah, you didn't say anything.
I didn't say anything.
You didn't say anything.
That's me blowing a blow dart.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's all for goofs. But yeah. 420 blaze it, everybody.
Okay, but that's why you're here, John, because you lift me up.
Yeah, because I'm here to have fun.
You're here to have fun.
If I don't make you laugh at least once, then I did a bad job.
I think I laughed off mic, I think, once.
Right? You did. My job. I ask you about your day. Mm-hmm. I ask what's stressing you out, get you talking,
mm-hmm.
and then you're warm and ready to talk video games.
Yeah, but that's why we're such a great duo, right? Because we complement each other so well. And duos are the subject of our main topic today in this episode of We Are Air, OneOfUs.net's premiere video game podcast. As I referred to myself in the opening, I am Christopher J. Herman.
And I am your boy, John Roman.
Yes, and we are here to talk about video game news and all sorts of video game nonsense. And as we do with every episode, we're going to start with the news. And we got some Star Wars Battlefront 2 news. At Star Wars Celebration, EA announced that Star Wars Battlefront 2 will be released worldwide on PS4, Xbox One, and PC on November 17th and is now available for pre-order. Battlefront 2's campaign will take place in the 30-year period between the end of Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. The story will follow protagonist Aiden Versio, who leads an elite Imperial unit called Inferno Squad, and players will get the chance to play as well-known characters like Luke Skywalker and Kylo Ren during the campaign. According to EA, the campaign is developed by former Ubisoft Toronto head Jade Raymond, Motive Studio, and new characters have been created in close partnership with the story group at Lucasfilm. On stage at Celebration, Lucasfilm confirmed that Battlefront 2's story will be canon within the Star Wars universe. "We wanted to create a campaign that told a story we haven't seen before in Star Wars," Motive game director Mark Thompson said in a statement. "It was important for us to tell a new, authentic story, one that gives players a brand new perspective. By putting players in the boots of an elite member of Imperial Forces, we can show them what the battle was like from the other side." Battlefront 2's multiplayer, meanwhile, is once again developed by DICE, who developed the first game. Battlefront 2's multiplayer will span all three eras of Star Wars films and will have playable heroes and villains including Rey, Luke, Yoda, Darth Maul, and more. Modes will support up to 40 players, and maps announced so far include Yavin 4, Mos Eisley, and Starkiller Base. Space Battles will also return and are in development by Criterion, who previously worked in the Burnout franchise as well as the X-Wing VR experience in the first Battlefront. EA says Battlefront offers high-stakes dogfights and with land and air vehicles, and players will be able to pilot ships including First Order TIE Fighters and the Millennium Falcon. So, John, I think this is a lot of good things that we're hearing so far for Star Wars Battlefront. One, I like that they've confirmed that this new story is going to, you know, really kind of focus on something we don't often see in many Star Wars games, which is told from the perspective of the villains, or at least people may perceive themselves to be good guys, but they are actually villains, which is this Imperial elite soldier, part of Inferno Squad, which is also a book, by the way, which is going to be released sometime, I think, this year. So I guess, you know, it's just this, all this marketing material just kind of coalescing into one big thing where you got the video game, and you got the book, and then you got the movie coming out. It's like, much Star Wars.
I'm really glad you clarified who the bad guys were, because I was like, wait, is the Imperial the good guys?
Yeah, the Empire. Guys? Well, now they're the First Order. They're called the First Order. They rose from the ashes of the Empire.
And I could have sworn Inferno Squad, that ties into something else as well.
It's a book. It's going to be a Star Wars book. But we talked about it actually on Breakfast Pub.
We did.
Yeah, we
right,
did.
Mm-hmm. We did. What was it about? Like, is it related to some... the starters of the First Order, or did it have something to do with Rogue One? I couldn't remember.
Well, I think it was actually, it was going to be a Rogue One sequel novel where it tells the perspective of the elite squad, this elite Imperial squad who's going to Yavin 4 in retaliation for the destruction of the first Death Star. And I guess it's following this squad and their like attack on the Yavin 4 base. Because, you know, The Rebels just didn't stay there after they blew up the Death Star because it's like, okay, we destroyed this one thing, but the Empire's still out there. They know where we are now, so they're going to send these massive fleets after them. And I think Inferno Squad is like the one that's leading that charge against the Rebellion. And in here, yeah, we're going to apparently playing as this one character who is a member of this squad. And I think it's just their journey from, like, as I said, Return of the Jedi all the way up to The Force Awakens. So kind of like their life and their experiences after kind of the fall of the Empire and the rise of the First Order, which I think is cool. It's not the vignettes like Battlefront Run, which I'm like, oh, that would have been awesome because you can play in all the different eras. But
better.
I like the fact that, well, one I think is cool is that this isn't going to be created by DICE, but it's, you know, it's the former, Ubisoft team that's coming in there to kind of handle the single player while DICE concentrates on what they usually typically do best, which is kind of the multiplayer type aspects of the game, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I think it is good that they're not trying to let DICE do
this. They're getting a storyteller in there.
Yeah, yeah. Jade Raymond had a hand in the first Assassin's Creed, right? She was like the big marketing
Yeah.
Was she also involved in two?
Yeah, just to clarify, yeah, Motive Studio, that's her studio.
Okay. So. Oh, her new studio. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like they split it up and everything. That's neat. Yeah. But you know how I feel about Battlefront 2, where I'm just like, sure.
I mean, so far, it seems like they're doing everything right.
They are doing good things, and I do think it's good that they added a story mode and that this is going to be an actual game, you know, actually worth the price of $60. That's actually my opinion. It's going to be a game worth this price, hopefully.
Yeah. No, I hope so, too. And then, you know, like, you know, EA loves kind of like cross-pollinating all these studios together for like one project because you got Criterion working on all the vehicle sections for Battlefront
2.
No,
I'm not cool with that. Like, I was in the
But at least we know it's going to be good. Because, you know, that's, I mean, they're good at that.
Yeah, but
all those crashes, man. All those burnout like crashes.
Could have used them for something great. Like, this more burnout.
This could be great. I wish, like, all these studios had their own game that they were working on. You know, we want Criterion to do, like, their own passion, you know, their own passion project.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this gives me confidence that not so much as just all this content is not being placed on one developer to do. Because then it's kind of rushed. Whereas here, each one is working on a different segment of a specific game. I think that's really interesting. And hopefully that this kind of all comes together into one great package. Where it's like my one concern with that is just that it'll feel kind of like disconnected from each other. It's like this segment will feel polished where this segment might not. You know? So, I mean, we'll see. I'm hopeful that everything will come together for Battlefront 2. But moving on from that, Ubisoft is opening up two new studios in Europe, one in Bordeaux, France, with the other in Berlin. Both will assist on AAA games for the publisher. Ubisoft Bordeaux, for instance, will work on franchises like Just Dance, Steep, and Ghost Recon Wildlands. The newly found studio in France will report to Xavier Poix, who is managing director of Ubisoft's French companies. Ubisoft Bordeaux will become the fifth French studio for the company. Ubisoft Paris was the first internal team and is currently celebrating 25 years in operation. Meanwhile, Ubisoft Berlin will assist on an unannounced project with the Blue Byte teams, which are known for strategy games like The Settlers and Anno 2205. The new studio in Berlin will report to Benedict Grindel, who serves as the studio manager for Ubisoft Blue Byte. In the first year of both new studios, Ubisoft plans to bring on 100 additional employees. Last year, the publisher opened up Ubisoft Philippines. So Ubisoft just opening as many studios as possible. A lot of this we don't know what they're specifically working on. Even Ubisoft Philippines, like, what game do they do?
Yeah, like, you know? What are these studios?
They're all there to advance Uplay. That's what they're all there for.
Do you think they're all just, like, super small then?
I think they're going to be pretty big.
They're just, like, barely touching.
I mean, Ubisoft Philippines? I don't know, but I know that these two new ones are going to be, you know, working on AAA games.
Yeah, but like we said, like, Criterion isn't exactly the AAA developer it once was. It's just there to put a third, you know, of a game together.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a third, because it's just like a piece of the story.
Yeah, or this specific mode, which is all the flight stuff.
Yeah, which is like a piece of a half.
Yeah, I get that. But I mean, Ubisoft is kind of... all their games, for whatever reason, seem to be just going in one specific direction, which is all
big.
I mean, yeah, huge open worlds, multiplayer focused, which just kind of disappoints me because I don't think we'll ever get like a, I don't know. I've kind of been craving a game which is very linear at this point, which is kind of weird, especially after Mass Effect. I was like, I need something that's
Early preview of our review of that game, but fuck it.
Oh, fuck it.
I'm just, like, tired of playing it.
Yeah, man. No, I'm right there with you. I'm kind of tired of it. And so I just want a game that where I'm not exploring this open world where I know it's going to be, one, because I don't have any time anymore.
Yeah.
When it's, you know, between a 5 to 10 hour experience, I'm completely fine with that. But hopefully maybe they'll go in that direction, these two studios, but probably not.
That's actually one of my biggest annoyances with Mass Effect in general, is that it's just so big.
Yeah.
So much is going on.
Yeah.
And so, like, you're right. I really do crave a short experience. And, like, you can make a franchise out of one game that is a short experience. Like, everything doesn't have to be 100 hours. Like, I've been talking about how much I want to play Persona 5, but I just want a game that I can finish in a week. Like, I really just, I might just put up Retro Replay or Rare Replay and just start playing Banjo-Kazooie or just start playing Bioshock. Like, I just want to play something I can beat.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one game actually I've been going back to is Bioshock. Because
it's fucking good.
It is fucking good. And even though there's a lot of exploration, it doesn't feel like I'm like, oh, I got to go here, I got to go there. It's just, I like the experience and I like the way it's paced. And then, of course, we've been playing a lot of Telltale games. We'll be reviewing some of those as well. And
ooh,
those are pretty short experiences, too.
And news piece, the new one, episode 4, coming out the 25th, 23rd?
Yeah,
it's coming out next week.
Next week, or, yeah.
I'm hyped, my boy.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to play it. And Guardians came out this week, too.
Not as hype about that, but, you know, like, again, the Telltale, I am very scared. I have to wait to play 4, but I'm very scared that them cutting their efforts in half.
They've done this before, though.
I know, but...
Didn't ruin Tales of the Borderlands, although Game of Thrones sucked.
See? Something's going to suffer.
That was my opinion. A lot of people disagreed with
that. Something's going to suffer, is what I think.
I don't know. It depends how many people they have and if the teams are all kind of divided up. I think a lot of the teams are not all working on the same project. So, you know, who knows?
I just really hope that the last two episodes of Walking Dead Season 4, or Season 3. That, like, they come through. Because I think it's going to be in my GOTY list at the end of the year.
Yeah,
just like
that.
A real sleeper hit for me. Mm-hmm. And I just do not want them to fuck it up there at the end. Yeah. Like right before the finish line.
No.
And I forgot we were talking about Ubisoft. Yeah. But this is good news.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, like we said, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's cool that they got two AAA studios. I'm at least interested to see what they're going to be working on. So
out of all the big publishers, I am always interested in whatever Ubisoft is doing.
We'll probably see like in two or three years what their projects are. So go from there. Nintendo discontinued the NES Classic Edition because it will release the much-requested SNES Classic Edition this year, according to a new report.
Yeah.
Eurogamer, whose sources correctly leaked information about Nintendo's Switch console prior to its reveal, claims that the SNES Classic Edition, or SNES Mini, in Europe, will be released in time for Christmas, and that development is underway. There's no information on what games the microconsole would include or could include, nor whether it aims to correct some of the problems with NES Classic Edition, such as its unit shortages and its absurdly short controller cable. Nintendo controversially discontinued the production of the NES Classic Edition, despite its sellout popularity and a clamor for new units to be produced. I mean, I guess this doesn't kind of surprise me that they'd be doing this. I'm not sure how many of these actually sold. I'm sure you can find that online. I didn't take the effort to look, but I think it obviously sold well. And it's Nintendo doing the thing that kind of bugs me, where it's this kind of false
shortage.
Thank you. And it's just like, you know, that's weird. I never kind of like that. And it's like, maybe they're just trying to drum up more hype and excitement for the SNES, which is probably one of my favorite Nintendo consoles, but I just don't feel
I think
need
it's one of
it.
The best consoles of all time.
Sure. There's when some of really the best games.
When you look at its catalog, it's top three.
Yeah, sure.
Would you
consider buying something like this? I mean, SNES.
Definitely.
Mini? Even though a lot of those games are available on other platforms.
Yeah, but I bet
that's my whole thing.
I bet it's gonna come in a cute package.
Yeah,
and sure, like will. This is the thing. The
you own an SNES.
I know.
See it right there. It's underneath the TV.
I thought that too. But the hype, Chris, that I felt when I saw this, because
good at that.
Because I'm gonna have the SNES on my CRT TV that I put in my room. Mm-hmm. Like that's where that stays. But I could put that little SNES mini right under my monitor, and it'd be hooked up HDMI, and it's just like
24-inch monitor. Yeah, rocking the 24-inch.
Something about it's like this is just so cool, and I think the thing about it is I want to stay right in front that I don't think Nintendo aims to correct the shortage problem, because it I think it's very much like...
Yeah.
I think I read a report somewhere that the NES shortages was more like, we only planned this for a special holiday release. It's a special thing.
And get when you can.
You know, like, we'll see when they release Earthbound for what, $10 or whatever, $20, whatever they released it for when they released it on Wii U.
Right.
The way they upcharge you to not only own it on your 3DS, but also to own it on your Wii, and then make you pay again to have it on your Wii U.
Well, they've done that for years.
I know, it's because... It's the same way. It's like they're protecting their IPs at all times. They're protecting their catalog because they know we're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
At some point or another, we will pay because you have to play Mario 3.
Mm-hmm.
You have to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to play the original Legend of Zelda. You have to at least have experience with all of these games on the NES and the SNES to a larger extent.
Mm-hmm.
And by treating each property so special... When they do stuff like this, it is newsworthy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh my gosh, like we are getting an easy way to access this. And like, I think it's great.
I say an alternate way to access it. Because, like I said, all those games are available right now that you can pay for them.
That's true, but it's so convenient.
Is it convenient?
Why do consoles exist? You could just build a fucking PC. Like, it's all there.
But it's not convenient. It's expensive. And
exactly. That's what I'm saying.
But yeah, but a lot of these... SNES type games or these games are available on they're available on like the 3DS or the virtual console and stuff like that.
But it's like,
I guess you're just kind of, I mean, I'm being a curmudgeon.
No.
But I'm just saying, like, I get why people would want this because it's a part of history. It's going to have these games on. It's like, look, I never was able to own an SNES console, so now I own it now.
Exactly.
So
it's kind of hard to find a working SNES or a working NES.
You're absolutely
you have
right.
to go through the eBay Strive pawn shops and shit.
Mm-hmm.
You can just buy this, $60, have, I assume, what was it, 60 and 30 games? $60, 30 games.
Yeah.
You just do that as $2 a game, which is... I think cheaper than they usually end up being
on
the console.
That is true.
And in order to do that, if all you wanted was this particularly, or you wanted to show your little kids, like, hey, play this instead. You don't need the new stuff yet. Like, these are really good. And understand it. And it's like, one, you save a lot of money.
Yeah.
If you want to play the virtual console now, I guess you buy a Wii U. And even then, you don't quite know.
No one wants that.
Exactly. And even if you do that, you don't know if it's going to... carry over in the future and be there for the Switch. This thing, like, because my dad had an NES Classic, and the instant I saw this news, I was like, put that thing in a box and just, or put it up, because you're not playing it now, but in 30 years you can be sure that as long as you took care of it, it is there.
Mm-hmm.
In 30 years I can't be certain that the things I bought on Nintendo's virtual console will be accessible to me.
When we're in the apocalypse because of Trump. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But HDTVs are going to be aplenty.
Yep, that is very true. I'm being a little mean today.
The first two news stories, I was like, whatever.
I'm glad people are excited for this, and the SNES has a fantastic library.
Before we move on, though,
yeah,
give me five games you think have to be on it.
Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past, Super Metroid, Super Mario World, one of the Castlevania games.
Wait, which one would that be? It's just Super, right?
Super Government. Super, which is
the only one that's on there.
It's good. Yeah. God. I don't know.
Wow. Not an RPG. It's a Resident Evil in there. Final Fantasy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. Oh, my. Because I associate the PS1. You know that.
That's true.
So I would. Final Fantasy 6.
Three.
Yeah,
it's called 3. In America.
Well,
you're Japanese, boy.
I'm calling it Japanese. Yeah, Final Fantasy VI. Yeah, I can't believe I forgot that. Oh, man. That's how tired I am. An Australian-made documentary seeking to explore and discuss the history and impact of GoldenEye 007 on 64 has been announced. Golden Era will examine how an inexperienced team were able to defy expectations and build one of the most respected and influential console shooters ever. The team has revealed the film alongside an Indiegogo campaign to assist in its completion. They also showcased a brief trailer, which features interviews of a variety of experts from both the game and media industries. Thankfully, we've been able to film many interviews for the documentary already, said Golden Era director Drew Roller. And after speaking to several GoldenEye's developers, as well as many interesting experts from IGN, Kotaku, GameSpot, and Good Game, we've found a story that's even more fascinating than we hoped. As a result, the team has turned to crowdfunding to capture many stories and create the documentary that this game deserves. The budget has been pegged at $85,000, but stretch goals are in place should funding exceed the original goal, including shooting in North America and a trip to Versailles Dam in Switzerland, the location of the film's iconic bungee jump sequence. Golden Era is on track for a late 2017 release. I think this is pretty cool. One, because I hope to see kind of more documentaries kind of based on a you know, well-known game development. I always think those are really interesting. And, I mean, Golden Eyes is one of those iconic shooters I think everyone has had some type of connection with at one point in their lives. So
I think this is great. I know we've had like stuff like Indie Game the Movie and that Atari movie about the E.T. I've talked about this when I talked about composers in video games more often than not, but on a larger scale about gaming history, a lot of that stuff from the past is going to get lost if we don't find a way to save it or recover. There's, you know, we talk back on Nintendo, but there are problems where it's like they just fucking lost the source code to a game or something. So that's why it's hard for us to like get it emulated or like get the actual original version, because it's like, you didn't know the importance of it back then. Like, why would you?
Yeah.
Like, for all I know, the stuff I type up or notes could be important if we ever make it huge. Like, this could be cool.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't always save it. The notes, at least. I save our shows, but I don't always save our notes.
Well, they're on the drive, right? Yeah. I mean, most. Have you been deleting them?
No, I'm just saying, like, where's Google going to be in 30 years? True. You know, tech, we're just, like,
throwing it inside our heads.
But This stuff, like you said, needs to be documented.
Yeah.
I don't know who made GoldenEye, and I would love to know.
Rare.
I know, but I mean, like, I don't know all of the people who are involved.
Yeah, sure.
And like, I think
they
deserve the time on camera and like put their faces to the games. There's too many developers that go unnoticed, and there's so many composers from the past. I've talked about this. So like, who knows who made that sweet track, because a lot of the time they would go through a pseudonym or, you know, they don't like to boast that they did it. You know, only a certain few really kept their names going strong. And it's like, these documentaries will help, you know, keep that going. And like, so that we can tell our children and they can tell their children, like, there's this game called GoldenEye and this is who made it. And this is the team, and watch this movie and learn about its impact to the culture. And like, learn why the game you're playing now is possible because of something like this. Because I think GoldenEye was really revolutionary in terms of console shooters, and in terms of like couch shooting, co-op. You know, like Halo wouldn't exist without GoldenEye.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, GoldenEye was kind of the progenitor of first-person shooters on consoles. Didn't think I knew that word.
I knew. Was that a
good word?
Is that a reference to something?
It's my word of the day on my calendar. It's like,
I swear that's a villain in something. Like
progenitor,
a Halo game.
Probably.
Like the progenitor.
The Archons or whatever that found. No, I'm thinking of Mass Effect again. all my games are all mixed up. But no, I mean, yeah, I'm excited for this. I love GoldenEye. It's like a game I've always kind of wanted to consider going back to and just seeing, like, how does it hold up? Probably not well, but at the same time, because I don't think you can look up in that game, which is crazy to think about that. It's like, you got
to
look side to side.
All the enemies are
going
like,
to be, you don't need to look
front side to side.
So, this is so awesome, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I just, like, that's so classic and it's so good. And I know we're about to kick it over to the second segment, but I gotta get that early plug in for that DreamHack panel that we're about to do.
Yeah, keep
that's
doing it.
Super
do it.
Exciting.
Drop it.
It's coming out April 29th, correct?
Yeah,
Saturday,
9:30
at the Austin Convention Center.
9:30 at night, by the way.
9:30 at night. These two knuckleheads are going to close the day off.
Yeah.
Talk about games media, from magazines to YouTube to podcasts to wherever it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like, I think this is a form of games media, these documentaries. And it's like, in a way, the essence of like video game historians at this point, because we're the only ones kind of keeping this going.
Mm-hmm.
And not us specifically, but various other people.
Type like us.
Yeah. And so like, I'm really excited for that panel and getting to talk about that. And so if you're in the city, and you have the opportunity, check it out. Be on the lookout for like the recordings of it or a live stream of some sort. We'll be sure to send that out. But anyway, on to the duos.
from Batman that easy. Batman. Easily. Robin. Easily. Batman. Good grammar is essential, Robin. Robin. Thank you. Batman. You're welcome.
So, like, I mean, if you just want to start off like that, we can, because I did hit record right before I
said
that again.
Oh, did you do
so
that?
So I think we just in it. I think we just in
we're
it,
we're just in it. Yeah.
We in this?
I had no idea you were recording.
I know. And, like, see, I think that's this little back and forth that we got, mm-hmm. where I'm going to pull the rug out from under you, because I wanted to catch
yeah, especially when...
That's why we...
I am irate. That's the next word in my word of the day calendar.
Is that tomorrow's day?
Yeah. Okay. I look ahead sometimes.
That's why we are one of gaming's best duos.
We are quite a duo. I think we're one of the best duos on oneofus.net.
Technically, we're the only one, aren't we?
Yeah. Chris Squared, I guess, is the thing. Some people have dubbed it that.
But,
after Breakfast Pub.
You know,
but that's only for subscribers, though. People don't know about that.
Yeah, you got to subscribe if you want to mm-hmm. hear what he's talking about.
Yeah,
but I'll
you
let
should,
you know.
You
I'll let you know this one thing, though.
Yeah.
Like, that makes us win out. Mm-hmm. Chris Cox ever been on this show?
He's been on this show.
On this show.
He's been on one of our reviews.
Oh, he has?
Yeah.
Did he just show up randomly?
No, he was on the Uncharted 4 review. We had him on once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But was it just you two ever?
No.
How many times have I done Breakfast Pub? Just me and you.
Three times. Going to be four.
Going to be four.
Yeah.
So, like.
Yeah. No, we're good. We are a dynamic duo. We are the dynamic duo of oneofus.net. But
so we might as well get to these 10 other chumps that come
Yeah, these
us
guys.
Out.
It's like, who cares?
Yeah, we actually, this time we're going to try ranking them.
Yeah, I guess.
Just in a way.
In an arbitrary, like. Yeah, I guess this is
I think
what
these
might
are
do
10.
It. I mean, you ranked them. I just wrote out here's some that we should talk
well,
about.
Well, like, I went through it and I even had Trace back it up because I wanted someone who's not as in depth with them. Like, someone who's like, when I think duos, what do you think, Trace? And you'll find out what one of them was because they're near the top.
And, you know, he'll give his opinion. He's very adamant about
that. Yeah, he's just like, this. I think once, and I'm going to say up front that, like, Drake and Sully are not on here.
Yeah. I mean, we can go into the ones that.
You want to do the honorable mentions?
Yeah.
Well, one of them, I think it was Drake and Sully, where he's just like, they ain't that good.
I wouldn't say that.
I know.
Not that, good. It's just that thinking back, a lot of the times they're actually not together.
Yeah.
You know, really, it's only in three are they consistently together, and you know, and that they have both a role in gameplay and also a major role in the story together, because it is about them and their relationship.
The third one.
The third one.
That's the one that starts off with like young Drake stuff, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think, and I said this off mic, but I think it's. The more dynamic duo in that franchise is him and Elena, because I think their relationship is more like a push and pull, and like even it's kind of like a under through line throughout all the games. And honestly, it becomes the center factor more than actually him and his brother in Uncharted 4 in a way where it's like his brother is new and it's kind of like, well, how does he fit into the relationship?
It's weird almost
of
it's
him
weird.
And Elena.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Just something about that. That's why they didn't end up making it on here, because I wrote a bunch of duos down and I was like, Drake and Sully, like, they are cool, but I feel like without Sully in the games, Drake would still be Drake.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any sort of back and forth with them.
Another, of course, duo from Uncharted is Chloe and Chloe's butt, which is quite a dynamic duo indeed, and they have a significant role in gameplay and the narrative.
They work great together.
They do. Yeah, exactly. And I guess, let me see, what else we got here? Baby Mario and Yoshi. I think that'd be another one where I would just kind of associate, or Mario and Yoshi, where I would just kind of associate them as strictly like a gameplay type duo. And really, it's Yoshi acts as an upgrade, in my opinion, where he's not really like a character.
Yeah, I think...
Like an item, almost.
The argument could be made, because one of the ones we do have on the list is similar to this in a way, but I think, and when we get into it, I'll explain it a bit more, but I think there's no real... depth
yeah.
of this relationship.
I mean, that's a lot of Nintendo characters.
Yeah.
It's just that it's not the one that typically people associate with Mario, obviously, and we'll get into that later. Then, of course, go ahead.
We also left Sonic and Tails off at the last minute because you were just like, no.
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 I mean, I was adamant about that one because I just don't think they are a very good duo. One, because the first game that they're featured in, they actually work against each other in gameplay. It just doesn't make any sense. Where you play as Sonic and you go off like half across the map, Tails is left behind, and you're constantly teleported over and over and over again to the first player, whoever's playing as Sonic. That's just frustrating. And, I mean, yeah, I could probably say I don't know much about the relationship in the games, but from what I have seen, there's nothing there. This is like... People just like it because they're on the box cover together all the time. That's really why.
See, I think that is it. Sonic actually shares a title with not even Tails, but with Knuckles. So, which is a different thing. It's more of an antagonistic duo, which if we wanted to do that, we would have done like Ryu and Ken. But like,
sure.
I think that's also a sort of duo in a way, this enemy, arch enemy sort of situation, which also could be its own show.
We should do arch enemy sometime.
Shadow that's will good. Show up. Shadow will show up.
Oh, Shadow will do it. Oh, yeah, yeah. Lame villains.
He's got to.
Yeah. We should do an arch enemy episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I like future. How, I like when we record episodes, we find other topics for future episodes.
So we got like 20 ideas.
Like,
now.
I'm pretty sure you can probably find the episode in which we bring up that we're going to do this episode.
Probably.
Anything else that you wanted to point out? Master Chief and Cortana will not be on here because they suck.
I don't think they suck. It's
just Chief that, sucks. Well, Chief has no personality until the fourth one. And at that point,
no, I agree with that. I mean, I talked about that kind of in our what was it? Crazy People episode, right? Which I thought was fun. So yeah, I have really nothing more to say about that. I mean, Trippin' Monkey from Enslaved. I mean, I kind of gone over that before.
What about the original boys, Salem and Rios? That army of two.
Oh yeah, you know that. Oh, I'm all about Alpha and Bravo.
I remembered it.
I remember it too. I had a friend who was like obsessed with that game.
It's cool. It is a cool game. The first one, I think the ideas are really cool. They're like, you do fist bumps with each other and like you go back to back. I think one of the other games that's going to be mentioned on this list, the idea that I associate with that game, I would have loved to have associated with Army of Two and this feeling of togetherness. I want to play it with my actual brother.
Brotherhood?
And I want to play it with them.
I know what you're talking about.
I think that would be really cool. One I want to point out, because I think it would have made it on this list had I had more experience with the franchise, Sam and Max. Because when I was going through this list too, it wasn't just necessarily video games. Mm-hmm. Like I want them to be a duo in video games for sure, but I also, like, how strong are they? Do people outside gaming community, would they be able to know them? Because Sam and Max are in comics together.
Yep.
And I think some of the top ones on our list, like, people just associate them together. Like, when you think this person, you think the other one. Mm-hmm. Whether you are deep into the game.
That's the name of the game title is Sam and Max, usually calling something else. Yeah.
So I think had I had more experience with those early Telltale adventures, or even the comic books, I think Sam and Max would have had a better shot probably being in the lower half.
Sure. Well, a lot of people probably would have that on their list. Yeah. So you can listen to their podcast if you want.
Or
come back to ours.
Or let us know what you would want on the list in the comments after you hear ours. Yeah. But let's go ahead and start with number 10. Mm-hmm. Or arbitrary number 10. Arbitrary. Pokemon Trainer and Starter Pokemon. Mm-hmm. This one was just a nice little curveball because it's more, I'm not saying Red and Charmander, or is he called Blue in Blue?
Well, no.
Is he just always Trainer?
He's always Trainer, and then you can fill in the name, but it's like in Pokemon canon, the character from the original game is always named Red, and the rival is always named Blue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, I think like the chosen Pokemon for Red has always been Charmander and Blue has always been Squirtle. So it's like, I guess that kind of makes sense.
Okay. And there was a green in Japan?
There was a green. That was featured Venusaur.
And this one also could have been, like, some people might think, oh, well, why don't you just say Ash Pikachu? Well, because it's fucking anime.
Yeah.
Back it up. Like, mm-hmm. That's more anime related. Pikachu is like the only, he's never a
not even
starter.
Yeah.
He's the only time he's a starter is in Yellow.
Yep.
It's the one I love. But also, you're not Ash in that game. Mm-hmm. You're still Trainer,
if I
recall correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
And this one is more, to me at least, I think about it in the way, I think we had this conversation off mic where you're like, oh, I choose Bulbasaur. And I was like, that's wrong. And you explain why, and it's like kind of how you think about it. And I always select like the cutest one or like the cuddly one.
Like, you don't like Onion Turtle? You're not a big fan of Onion Turtle?
No.
You want the lizard who is lit.
A lit lizard.
Lit lizard.
Then Litten is a lit kitten. That's like, that's
Litten.
Fucking great, Chris. That's great.
Which I wouldn't even, but my whole thing is that I kind of associate like the best duos with just the original game. Like from Red and Blue. Like that's how I just think of it. Maybe because it's just, that's what I originally started with. Mm-hmm. And so I always think of the Trainer, Bulbasaur, Squirtle, and Charmander.
Well, see, that's the thing too. Is like, I think this choice is more universal in the sense of like, that was your first Pokemon game. Someone started on Gen 2. Someone started on Gen 3. I mean, they're all sad individuals, but hey, they started on this
Gen. Yeah, if you started on Gen 3, you're sad. Gen 2, Gen 2 you're still, Gen 2, Gen 2, you got cool. Totodile, you got Chikorita, and you got Cyndaquil. So you're still
They're
good.
All cute.
Yeah.
Totodile is coolest.
Totodile is coolest. I agree. We agree on that. He's the best one.
But this was more about the idea of the player's connection to their starter Pokemon. This, when I say Pokemon trainer, I mean you. Mm-hmm. Like, you, the player. And that relationship that you build, because it is, I feel like, hardcore people probably end up maybe switching out their starters and like really digging deep into it. I'm on a powerful six, but like when I play the game, like personally, I always keep my starter Pokemon in there.
Yeah.
And like I build my team around him or her. And like, I don't know, I just always have a connection with them where I do make it so it's like, I want them to get all the XP. Like they have to survive this battle. I'm switching you out, put in my trash Pokemon. Because yeah. I need you to survive this fight. So yeah, that's why I think they're important, and it's more like that personal connection that a player has and how they see these Pokemon games. Like again, I choose the cutest one. I don't really think about the strategy too much. I just pick the one that's cute.
Sure. Until he becomes a horrible monster creature.
Apparently, grass is the best to pick at the beginning, but they're all
it is true.
They're always sucky.
No, not always sucky. Well, the most recent one you play is a grass owl. He's the best one.
He's
the best looking one out of all.
No, frog. The frog one.
No, that's XY. I'm talking about Sun and
Moon. Sun and Moon? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it's Litten. You are wrong. It is Litten.
No, it's not Litten. It is the owl, whatever the hell it is, the grass owl.
You don't even know his name. Exactly.
I don't know, it's Litten. Whatever. Okay. Well, speaking of personal connections, probably the most personal connection with an animal in any game is between Aggro. Is it Aggro?
Yeah.
Oh, that was Argo. So it shows how many times I played Shadow of the Colossus. But no, Aggro and Wander, his horse, where I think that stands out. I'm actually glad you put it on the list because I originally did not. But it makes sense because you really have no other connections in that game. Because you start out like, yeah, your girlfriend or wife, whatever the hell she is, she's like laying on a slab. She's like dead. It's like, I got to kill these things to save her life. It's like, all right. And for most of the game, everything else is like an enemy. Or it's just kind of just there. Like, it doesn't really have, like, a connection with you.
There's no life. There's no emotion.
There's no life. Yeah, it's just kind of open, except your horse. And I totally understand how not only is it, yeah, it's used specifically mostly for gameplay, but you do develop a bond with it. And once that horse, you know, exits the game, you feel like, you feel it. You know, you feel like an emotional loss right there. So, yeah, I mean, it has always worked, and I think that's probably – it is the best out of all the kind of duos in all of Team Ico's games, which there's each of their games have had a duo. I think this is the best one.
You know Aggro doesn't die, right?
I'm talking about the horse.
Yeah, he doesn't die. Wander is the boy. Oh, you didn't know that, did you?
I forgot.
You got it mixed up.
I forgot.
Yeah, Aggro's the horse. I was like, Aggro survives.
You are right. You are right.
Wander does have an
eviscerate me in the comments.
Untimely demise. Well, then again, you
Aggro dies. Aggro dies.
No,
the horse doesn't die.
The horse does not die. The horse walks off with a girl. I can never remember the girl's name. I want to say Yondu, I think that's the Guardians of the Galaxy character. Yorda Yondu is from Ico, so okay. I can't remember.
I could have sworn that horse died. I must be confusing it. I know I'm confusing it with Neverending Story. When that horse dies in the muck, or whatever it all is.
That's such a weird connection.
Because I don't know. I remember a horse dying sometimes.
Okay, let me. The ending of Shadow of the Colossus. Sorry, everybody, but Chris needs to know.
Yeah,
you beat all the Shadow Colossi. You beat all the Colossi.
I did that.
And then they corrupt his heart and he dies.
I remember that.
Then he's reborn in the little fountain as a little baby Ico.
Yeah.
Because we got to connect it all or else you won't play the next game. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'll be sad. And then the little girl. I cannot remember her name.
His wife.
It's not his wife. It's his just daughter.
His girlfriend.
Mono. Yeah. Yeah, Mono.
She has a name.
Okay. Yeah, she comes in, picks him up, and Aggro's there, like, following her. Because that's still, even when he kind of gets recreated, Aggro's there to now protect the girl and, like, still his original partner. Like you were saying, I think Aggro did play a pivotal part in the early onset of the game.
He's
your only method of transportation throughout this vast land. And riding from horseback is pivotal in beating some of those colossi. I think one that comes to mind initially is like this kind of low flying one that pops up out of the sand. And like these colossi, since they are so big, they're small little steps. You can't keep up when you're running. And so you do need aggro a lot.
It's Wander.
Oh my gosh, I thought you forgot.
I did forget.
Aggro, horse. Horse go fast.
They're going aggro.
Yeah, Wander don't know where he is, so he wanders. He wanders. The horse is smart.
Got it.
Horse is smart. Horse go fast.
I can't believe I screwed that up.
I can't believe I'm explaining to you like a child. But yeah, that's essentially the meaning behind the choice of aggro and wander, because I think, you know, we can go down all these lists, and I think as we go down the list, we'll see that a lot of them are very fun. Mm-hmm. There are some serious choices, yeah. And but Aggro and Wander are the first. Like, this is about a connection between a boy and his horse.
Yeah.
Oh, also, a boy and his bop is not on here.
I was looking at that one too.
Just so you know, I haven't played enough of it. I'm
neither
sorry.
Neither have I. So,
but number 8 is kind of a tie. Mm-hmm. Because I think it should be one, and you think it should be the other.
No, I think it should be both. I think it's just like, I think they're equal, especially how I've spent time with all these characters across all of these games.
You did play the third and a half. 3.5?
If you want to call it that. Yeah, okay. Judgment.
Gears of War Judgment. But yes, Gears of War Judgment. So obviously we were talking Marcus and Dom, and or, I guess, Baird and Cole. Mm-hmm. I don't think it should be Baird and Cole.
Well, here's the thing. What I like about... like, just to start off, Baird and Cole, they're very big personalities, and they're very distinctly different from each other. Baird is very sarcastic. Cole is larger than life. And I think that kind of someone who's very pragmatic and someone who's very positive, I think that complements either character very well. And they stand out immediately because of that. Marcus and Dom, Marcus didn't really become interesting until he was an old man in 4, in the true Gears of War 4 game, which I love that. He's so much of a curmudgeon. And Dom's just there.
I love how you, like, hate on like, I love how you love characters who, like, hate things.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I love the, because it's like, yeah, I hate that too. Yeah, let's bond over that. It's the New Yorker in me.
Well, like, you've always said this about Dom, that he's not really... much of a
he functions solely to Maria, which to me always felt hollow because I never really
did. You play the second one? The second one is so good. It has such a moment, and then the third.
Yeah,
one,
I thought that moment fell flat.
Oh god, it was such a good moment. Mm-hmm. I was also like 2008, so
yeah,
15,
2008,
so 15 peak Gears age.
I was thinking, because you know why? Because I was I think before that moment happens. Or maybe it was after that moment happens.
It's after.
When you got Cole going on, talking shit to the queen. It's like, we're in your house, bitch. We're going to kick all your grubby little kids' asses. It's like, okay, this is what I want from Gears of War. Okay, I want to
maybe that was after. I was thinking about when Hawk or Toma, the Indian character, just straight up shoots himself.
Which works. Which actually,
I think all of
that
it moment. That moment. That
Tio?
Whole, like,
Tito?
Tio. I feel like it's Teo.
Yeah.
Like T-E-O. I think that whole sequence, like them going into the underground and seeing like how bad the locusts are. I think all of that really works. And I think I get most of the emotion from Dom. Again, this is coming from the fact that Dom, one, is one of the only Hispanic characters I can really think of.
I get that. I understand
in gaming. Two, this game, you play as Marcus and Dom when you play co-op. And I played the first three with my little brother. And so again, this is more about my personal connection to playing these two. And I get it where, like, you're saying Marcus isn't much of a character because he's not really.
Yeah, he's angry.
And it feels,
he becomes a character
in
4.
He's, like, more pure anger than anything and just, like, loud. But I think it's the same sort of sense where it's, like, to me, Dom was, like, his right-hand dude who was, like, the more emotive of the two.
He's the sensitive one.
He's yeah. And maybe that's why I like him as well. And, like, you don't get as much time with Baird and Cole until... I don't know, the later games when people were like, oh, people do love Cole.
Yeah, and they do love Baird. Because Baird was the main character of Judgment. The thing is that with in regards to that scene in 2 when we find Dom's wife, I felt nothing because I didn't know who that character like was. I had no interaction with that character previously. It's just like, yeah, Dom's constantly talking about her, but they break the rule. It's like, show, don't tell. And they should have showed me that relationship more, or had she been actually featured in the first game. Like she's the other squad mate in the first Gears of War game, and you're playing with her constantly. And then she gets lost at the end of Gears of War 1 or something like that. And then we find her again in 2, and she's not even a person anymore, because she's lost her mind and her body as well. It's just like, that would be horrific. Then I would feel probably a bigger connection with Dom that way, because I'm sharing that tragedy with him. Whereas in that, I'm just watching the tragedy.
I think
it just doesn't. It felt hollow and it didn't work. And that's I think at the time that was Epic trying to create more of a narrative for the series. Where I think that the Coalition is doing a little bit better job in setting those, in sowing those seeds early on, and then eventually it's going
to
pay off.
They're doing it okay. First,
we can get into this again
to the point about Gears 2 first.
Yeah,
I think with the Maria thing, you don't really need her there because the point is to, like, you care about Dom because Marcos is so nothing that Dom is something, and that, like, Dom is sensitive and it's like he cares about this one thing in particular. He, like, goes through all this, like, war and brutality, but for this one thing, for this one amount of love, and when it is so close and he can almost have it and it is taken away, I think that is what rips it out, because there isn't as much, there's not a lot of love in those, in that series, except for the Dom and Maria aspect. And I think maybe as just a sensitive boy, that is what I attach to.
Yeah.
I will say the Coalition does a good job of planting seeds in a foundation for some good Gears games. Gears 4, though, not a good Gears game. Not a good Gears story.
I mean, we can argue about that until the, you know, whatever, until the locusts come home or whatever, or the, what do they call them now?
See, exactly. You don't remember because it's boo-boo.
But something that is definitely not boo-boo is the relationship between Lee and Clementine in the first season of The Walking Dead. Probably one of my favorite duos in any video game, because it is solely focused on building a relationship between these two characters, particularly playing as Lee and just protecting Clementine. It totally brought out my fatherly instincts, where it's like, I will do anything to protect this little girl. I will murder anyone in this world to make sure that she survives. And that's why I think it's one of the best just kind of duos in games, and also one of the best narratives in games.
It is also one of the most finite and the most...
Yep, you're right.
I don't know, impactful. Out of all of these, it's just this one and Aggron Wander that don't go on for multiple series. And I think that says a lot about the kind of impact they can fit in a short experience, especially The Walking Dead,
yeah,
which is, after all the work, 5 hours long, maybe?
Yeah. About, I'd say it goes up to like maybe 7.5. Some of those episodes go over a little over an hour.
But they always just feel so bite-sized and chunkable. Yeah. And it's, I think, the relationship, everything that you built, what's great about it is that since one of the characters makes it out, she's forever a reflection of that relationship.
Yeah.
You can still see it even though one of the duos is missing.
Exactly.
And I don't know, still one of the most coolest and just most impactful moments I've played in a video game in recent memory is the end of the first season.
Mm-hmm.
When like who you want Clementine to be,
mm-hmm.
you make in one final decision. And it's so interesting how these two came together by accident.
Yeah.
And it speaks a lot about like finding love where you can in such a like dark and dirty universe. And it talks about trust, and it talks about, you know, child rearing and
and being a father,
but also learning when you need to be a friend, because like what kind of friends do you get in this universe? I don't know. It's just the importance. That one, I think, best shows like the importance of certain decisions, because it can all come down to a certain choice. Mm-hmm. And that ending is a lot.
It is. Oh, it was one of the first video games to make me cry. I think it might be the first video game to make me cry. And so I love that moment.
I might have played To the Moon first, but I think that moment was as close, close followed.
I get. Oh, just by the way, if everyone should know, Sonic and Tails is originally in the 7th spot. And then they were replaced by Lee and Clementine.
Okay, so I
didn't say it was you. I didn't say, well, of course, you know, I guess they would know.
We've already said I initially set up the list. So don't blame it all on me.
I'm not blaming it all on you. I thought it was funny.
I told you, like, it's
okay. Iconic. They're iconic. I get it.
Sonic and Tails actually initially started
among off some at, groups of people. They are.
They initially started off at the
freaks, as I like to call
the
them,
at the fifth spot.
Furry DeviantArt freaks. Oh, they started at the fifth spot. Oh my god!
Yeah, above the next two that we're about to talk about. Yeah. But yeah, they're off. We talked about it. They're off because I don't know.
Because I was like, because
Chris was like, no, I will not put praise on this game. So, but yeah, to pivot off of that dark, sad, pivotal stuff.
Oh, cartoony duo, which I think they're
the Bonzo
much
monkeys.
More iconic.
Mm-hmm.
They are, well, no. One of them is a monkey. The other one is a gorilla. Gorilla. Oh, no, I guess he's an ape. Well, I don't know.
You know we're never going to know, because I don't know the difference.
There probably is. Well, you go and know. I'll look it up.
So it's Donkey and Diddy Kong. Specifically, when I think about Donkey and Diddy Kong, I do think Donkey Kong Country, like the original. Mm-hmm.
Their first appearance.
It is the first appearance of Diddy, right?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Their first on-screen kind of duo.
Yeah. Well, and I think the only other time we've seen this Donkey Kong
if it's still canon, would be Donkey Kong Jr.
Oh, it's canon, man. And fuck Jr. People, it's just like, when you think of duo, I guess they would actually be the original duo, would be Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr., but no one remembers Donkey Kong Jr.
If anymore. Anything, something, again, another antagonistic thing is Donkey Kong and Mario.
That's right.
Mario has a lot of big relationships, enemies. Which is crazy.
Yeah.
No. But what I was saying is Donkey Kong in this situation is Donkey Kong Jr. Because Cranky Kong is the OG Donkey Kong. Remember?
Are you serious? Is that really the original Donkey Kong is Cranky Kong?
Yeah. Have you not? You've played Donkey Kong Country, right?
Yeah, I have.
When he's like...
It's been a long time. Okay, it's been like over a decade.
There's a point where you talk to Cranky Kong. And like that, I'm saying if this is canon, like I don't know. I don't remember if they've ever gone back and been like, hey, this is canon. But Cranky has been hinted at being the original Donkey Kong. Because he's talked about back in my day, there are plumbers. Or something. He says something
shit.
Like you go talk to him. He's like, back in my day, this thing. And it's like, what?
That's really cool.
Yeah, so... again,
I had no idea about that.
I can't believe you never heard of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if Nintendo's, you know, backed away from it. I cannot recall. Someone correct me. Feel free to.
And Donkey Kong is... They just say he's an ape-like creature. They don't say whether he's like a chimp or a gorilla.
Donkey or Diddy?
Donkey Kong.
Donkey's not a chimp. I was talking about Diddy as a chimp because he got the tail.
No, Diddy wouldn't be a chimp because chimps don't have tails. He's a monkey.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, I got you there. You can have the Argo, whatever the hell his name is, Wonder. I got you there.
Anyway.
It's confusing, yeah.
Yeah, it's aggro, by the way.
Yes, whatever.
Aggro-aggressive, because horse go fast.
Mm-hmm.
Get it?
Yeah.
Okay. Donkey and Diddy Kong, yeah. I don't know, just Donkey Kong has to continually save Diddy Kong and from the barrels, which I think is kind of cool.
Sure.
That adds an element to their relationship, yeah. But they're also like right there side by side. Mm-hmm. And when one falls, the other is there to take its place and rescue the other. Like yeah. I did initially start off Donkey rescues Diddy, but when you first get a hit, Diddy rescues Donkey and they constantly are together. And another thing is, I wanted to put them in here because of the longevity of this relationship.
Yeah, yes. No, they are iconic. They are iconic Nintendo duo.
Yeah, and yes, by Donkey Kong Country 2, it's Diddy and Daisy, and then in 3, it's Daisy and a baby, I think.
I can't remember. We don't give a shit about that.
But, like, it pulls apart Diddy and Donkey, mm-hmm. but when Donkey Kong Country returns, they come back, and I think they come back better than ever, especially in, like, Tropical Freeze, where Diddy is now, like, your jetpack. And
that's right.
You become dependent on him, a la someone we may talk about
mm-hmm,
soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. They are one of those classic iconic characters, but I feel like they need each other to work at their best.
And also, I just remember they do have like a really cool kind of narrative relationship as well. And of course, in the iconic 1997 animated series Donkey Kong Country, which went on for 2 seasons, 40 episodes, where we got to know the relationship between Diddy Kong and Donkey Kong. And it was, I have to admit, there was a lot of death between those two characters. It's like Donkey Kong wanted bananas. Diddy Kong get the bananas for him? And so on and so on.
You know, I love, like, off mic you asked, so John, what kind of music you think about putting in here? Because you mentioned that means we're going to get a sound clip. Because I did watch that. From a Hastings, I rented, like, one of their movies, the Donkey Kong Jr. movies, which I guess just put together episodes
at
the time.
Yeah, that's what they were. Yeah.
And it was like a Crystal Skull episode, I think. And like Donkey Kong does a Michael Jackson song somewhere in it. You know what I'm talking about.
I knew what you're talking about.
I had thought for years that I dreamed this.
No, it was real.
But it was real.
It happened.
So you're going to get a taste of that at some point in this episode.
And it was like terrible CGI too.
Oh, no.
Like
it was garbage.
It was like reboot CGI.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, oh boy. It was not going to age well. But I remember it.
But right back from comedic and monkeying around, you want to introduce this one?
Hold on. I got all of my notes in front of me. I mean, of course, one of my personal favorites is Joel and Ellie from The Last of Us. I mean, I have spoken so much about this relationship and how it starts out where, you know, Joel is kind of bringing all this emotion into his relationship with Ellie because he kind of sees his daughter who died 20 years ago in Ellie and how it kind of, it starts off being a very kind of antagonistic relationship where these two people don't really want to be together, maybe in part because Joel because he sees his daughter in Ellie, he doesn't want to, like, I can't go through this again. I can't lose another person like this. But then as you go along, then there's this emotional journey and where Joel becomes progressively more selfish as the game progresses. And he makes a really kind of rash decision, kind of probably against like Ellie's wishes. And I just love how it's a relationship that's built on so much love and I think a lie as well. And I think that's just really cool because I think out of all the duos and all the and all these games that we've talked about, like I don't think any of these relationships are kind of built on lies except for this one, which I think is really unique and just really stands out. And why I'm excited to see that their relationship continue on in The Last of Us Part 2 because stuff is going to have to be addressed. And I'm really wondering if they're going to be kind of an antagonistic relationship by the end of that game.
It's a dark, twisted version of, I think, the relationship that Lee and Clementine have.
Yep,
right. Because Clementine is so young.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like this, talking about this in the Walking Dead, it makes me realize how kind of arbitrary these numbers really are. But mm-hmm. like, this is like the full evolution of love and what can happen to it.
We'll be corrupted if put something else.
In the wrong person. And yep. like, you don't quite understand that concept. Whereas like Clementine and Lee, they're very straightforward
father daughter.
Like yeah, father daughter and like just kind of pure love in a sense.
Yep.
And like sweet every decision tea. You make is even a lot of decisions we make in season 3 at this point are sort of from that fatherly perspective of yeah. like
with Javi, of with who Javier. Lee
was. Yeah. Yep. But I mean like when we think about Clementine actions, when you talk in the reviews, you talk as if you are still Lee in the game.
You're absolutely right. I'd never
treat her like that, even though at this point she's been through a lot of things, but like we yeah. still see her in the eyes of Lee.
Yeah, she's still my little girl.
What's great about The Last of Us is it's going to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to see from start to finish, potentially, like what that essence of Lee and Clementine, what that can turn into.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so... I don't know. The only reason I'm not really looking forward to playing Last of Us 2 as much as I am to just watch what happens
yeah.
to these two characters.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be happy to play it, but when I think about the game, I more think about, like, these two people, not the actual
you just want playing. You want the story, know where they the characters. Go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Keep going.
No, and yeah, we've talked about elements of survival and dependency on each other and... That's what makes these duos so important. And in this case as well, it's like
yep.
they are ride or dies in this game. Like mm-hmm. they need each other. And at some point, Joel does fall. Like he cannot be of help. And so Ellie has to step up. It's the Diddy for Donkey relationship.
Yeah. In terms of gameplay and, yeah, and the narrative.
Of, in terms yeah. of gameplay and the narrative. And it's, again, something I wanted to pull with these duos is like, they help each other out
mm-hmm.
in one way or another at some point in their lineage in their series. And I think The Last of Us does a great job of exploring all of that in the single game on its own.
Yeah.
And to see where it's going to continue to go is, I don't know.
Just personal, you know, selfish desire. I really want them to be enemies by the end of that game. I would love to see that arc where she figures out what Joel really is. And like, I want Joel to be the monster at the end of the game. Like he is the quote unquote final boss. If you want to, not in terms of gameplay, but just like, the idea of where a relationship could possibly go, it can be so corrupted and just turn to something hateful and spiteful. So it's like, I know people just want to probably, in their minds, I think a lot of people think of Joel as Lee, that guy.
But he's not.
But he's not, which it's just like, I really hope Naughty Dog goes for that and just, I want something very tragic and just depressing. But it'll be so different.
I know in the first one we play Joel, but the main character is Ellie.
Yeah.
To me, I think the main character is Ellie because everything she is the focal point of every action.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Same and, with Clementine to a certain extent.
Yeah,
I guess.
And so have they confirmed who we play into? Is it Ellie?
It is Ellie. She is the character you play as. Yeah.
So I can see Naughty Dog doing like a cinematic ending. My bad. Ending where I don't know. She pulls the trigger.
Yeah.
Like on him. Like that's mm-hmm. what it is because she realizes like even if he helps her there at the end, it'll still be like, but you. You're the reason this is still happening.
Exactly,
like you
yeah.
are the problem.
Yeah, I think it's. I hope that's what it's going to be. It's so cool. So
but
cool.
What's funny is like now I know we talk about how serious all this stuff is,
mm-hmm.
but games are supposed to be fun.
Yeah, they are.
And these next ones are just all about fun. And this next one is pure bias because it is Jack and Daxter.
I understand
the best duo in Naughty Dog history. Whoa. Laying it down.
Yeah, yeah. I would disagree, but I understand for a lot of people why that is.
Yeah, and you know why for me. Because mm-hmm. these are the games I grew up with. I yep. grew up with the PlayStation 2. And initially, Jack and Daxter came out in 2001, I believe. Yeah, December 3rd, 2001. Jack and Daxter, The Precursor Legacy. Jack could not talk Dexter was this loudmouth, and kind of the evolution, I think. The attitude era of these kind of games, laid by the foundation. Again, we'll get there. But I don't know. It's just this is more about like how long I spent with these characters, mm-hmm. and my growth with them. I think there's other interchangeable ones around their time period, but like there's something about Dexter, I think, that really got me. And he to me, even though he is technically the sidekick, he is kind of like, for me, the heart of the series. Cause Jack cannot talk initially, so Dexter has to drive it. By the second, it's that whole Prince of Persia Warrior Within era, when everything has to be dark, Jack immediately like grumbles. Angsty. We've got God of War going on, that kind of stuff. And then they have this kind of counterbalance where Jack is so focused and Dexter's so like lackadaisical. And I don't know, it's just their spirits are so different.
They like, complement each other very well.
It's kind of like the Cole and Baird thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just thinking of. It's like one is so pragmatic and just a curmudgeon. The other one is just larger than life.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's just, to me, this was a great example of how these two duos can these kinds of duos can go on.
Yeah.
And like how they can still be these fun mascot era things. And I think it is necessary in gaming to have something like this. That's why I'm really glad Yooka-Laylee has come out. And, you know, I know it has gotten mixed reviews.
Yeah, we haven't played it yet. So.
Yeah. But I want to see stuff like that continue because stuff like Jack and Daxter, I think, are important. And you can see like when one is missing, if you play like Daxter, it's a fine game, but it's missing something. These two cannot be separated. Sure. That's why they're here, because like when you separate them, it's just not a good game. I don't think it misses its spirit.
Yeah.
And these two very much have a spirit. And the reason they are four is because I think, there are a few, especially the next two, I think they have a better balance where neither is so like off in the other spectrum. Mm-hmm. There's more layers to the relationship, I think. And it evolves a little more.
Yeah. I mean, with the next one we're going to talk about, it's weird because I felt like in their first game, they didn't really work with each other very well. And it was kind of off-putting. And then, of course, I'm talking about Ratchet and Clank. And in that original game, like they kind of hate each other. And that was the one part of that title that really bothered me while playing it all those years ago. Probably why I stopped playing the series for so long. It's just like, these guys are just assholes. They don't have any sense of chemistry. They didn't compliment one another. Whereas where I would, my opinion changed completely after playing the reboot of Ratchet and Clank from 2016? Was that game that came out? Yeah, so last year, where it's like, oh no, they are friends and you do feel like a sense of connection. And whereas maybe I didn't play, you probably can speak better of this than I can in kind of the other games in the series, but in that one game, I instantly felt connected to them, even though, yeah, maybe they have similar personalities and they kind of want the same things, but they were just, they felt like true friends, like right off the bat. And maybe that just felt refreshing after we're kind of so many relationships in all these games, so many duos kind of start off being so antagonistic. I appreciated the fact that this duo just started off being really nice and friendly to each other.
I think the reason you like them so much is the opposite of the reason I like them. Because I did start off with that original 2002 game.
Yeah.
And they are antagonistic, but again, they do build eventually. Mm-hmm. Eventually they become who you see them in the reimagining. Because I think they were presented like that, not only because of the movie, but because they'd been through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games together.
Sequels, yeah.
Sequels. Yeah. You want to count spinoffs, it's like 12.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I'm talking about like mainline, because then they had the future series.
Right.
They carried on like continuously. When Jack and Sly got left behind in the PS2 era, like Ratchet was the one that was able to survive through.
Made the most money.
And the reason I put them ahead of like Jack and Dexter, even though I love Jack and Dexter more, is because their relationship is a little more complex. It does have to build a little bit. Mm. And again, by the reimagining, they are tighter. Yeah. You need Clank. You don't really need Daxter as much in gameplay wise, but Clank is a vital element of gameplay, you know, with different boost jumps and new technology and like
item. He's basically an item dispenser to a certain extent in gameplay. Yeah.
And he does have his separate sections, which again, like,
which don't work.
They're not great.
No.
And is another reminder of why these two need to be together. Yeah. I think one of the least liked Ratchet and Clank games, and that isn't one of those weird Smash TV-esque spinoffs, is Ratchet Deadlocked.
Is that the one who's a secret agent or whatever the hell he is?
No, well, there's Secret Agent Clank.
That's which
is when Clank
of.
Is a secret agent.
Right.
But he got that on PSP because Ratchet also got his own game where he doesn't have Clank.
Okay.
Instead of Ratchet Deadlocked. Okay. And it's this kind of like arena-esque all shooting. It's just, it loses that sort of buddy cop vibe that these two games have, or that these two people have.
You're right. Together. It is like a buddy cop type thing with them. I totally agree with that. Yeah. Very cool.
But yeah, I think these two are a good complement to Jack and Daxter.
And you probably, I mean, you saw that more than I did with from the first game, which I didn't particularly like. I found it off-putting, but it went from antagonistic and it grew over the course of all these.
I think
games.
You would like if you would go back to them. Like you can start with one; it's essentially
the trilogy or whatever.
Or like I'm saying, like because you played the 2016, you could just go to two.
Yeah,
you played. Similar thing. Mm-hmm. So, like, just go to two, and I think their relationship's a little better. Like, they do jab at each other, but, like,
again, but friendly.
Like buddy cops would.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we in this shit together. Mm-hmm. Punch. Like, it's whatever. But I think if you go back, you'll find their relationship has built, and it's a little funner. It's funner.
Yeah. So. Agreed. And, of course, probably the one that really kind of started the... They like these two influence, I think, Ratchet and Clank and Jack and Daxter to a certain extent. And of course, that's Banjo-Kazooie. I mean, when you think about it, they don't, I don't know if they have much of a personality because all of their stuff is like told via text and that's really it. But those jokes do come across where Banjo is just kind of like this, like, like easygoing guy. He's trying to have fun. And Kazooie is very kind of antagonistic and always berating him. Which I guess I've always thought of it, you know, weird because I was obsessed with Banjo-Kazooie back in the day in N64. I actually thought they were married. I thought it was like because I mean Banjo is a guy and Kazooie's a girl. I thought it's a husband and wife relationship, and that's or you know kind of like a. It's very weird. I know
that work.
Yeah, because she lives in his backpack. But I always thought of them as kind of a husband and wife type thing, and it's that kind of classic, kind of like honeymooners type of thing, where it's just like, you know, Banjo's he's trying to live his life, but then Kazooie's always berating him. Very kind of sexist relationship.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
You know, or everybody loves Raymond type of thing, where he's like, "Oh, Deborah," and he's like, "Ray, do this." It's like. I see a Banjo-Kazooie in them. I know this is going off in a weird direction, but I've always kind of looked at them as a couple, which is really weird. But I think that kind of works for them, too.
Okay, so... I never expected Everybody Loves Raymond to come up in this show.
It did. That's a good show, man. It's really good.
What really bothered me about that wasn't the, like... pseudo sexism going on.
Yeah,
but it was the fact that
because she'd always like talk shit to Banjo.
It was just the fact that it's 2017, and there's so many shows out in the world. And the first two that come to mind are Honeymooners, and Everybody Loves Raymond
because it's
are you 80?
It's that type of relationship that I think of, you know, with them too. Like, yeah, it's just this weird couple that's like, I don't know, stuck in like the 90s or 80s, that type of thing. Or I guess Honeymooners should be like the 50s or whatever.
Exactly. Did you watch the Honeymooners?
Because, Honeymooners was like the progenitor of all of those shows.
I guess that makes sense. Because that's why I put Banjo-Kazooie so high initially.
Because it's
like,
a progenitor.
I do see them, like you said, there is no Ratchet and Clank. There's no Jack and Daxter. In a sense, like, there's three of them, but there's no Sly, Billy, and... Murray, sorry. I always forget.
What's the guy?
Murray.
What's the turtle?
Bentley. He's easy to remember. I always forget the hippo. I don't know why. He's just like the third guy.
Like, no one cares about him. He's annoying.
He's just big.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have very little experience with Banjo-Kazooie, honestly. Mm-hmm. I've played it, and I've played Nuts and Bolts, I actually think, the most.
Yeah.
I think it's a fine game.
It's okay.
I think it's fine. It's not a Banjo-Kazooie game.
No,
it's not a bad game. Mm-hmm. But like I said... I built the list and I wrote all the people down and I asked Trace for his outside opinion and he goes, Banjo-Kazooie has to be up there. Top two.
Uh-huh.
Like for sure. And I was just like, what? Have you played them? It's like, nah, but like when you think duos, it's like, Banjo-Kazooie. And I think it's cause it's just, their names are tied together.
That's the title of the game.
That's what he said. He was just like, their names are together. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like Banjo-Kazooie. I didn't even know it was two different names. I don't think that's me. I don't honestly think I knew it was two different people for the longest time. I thought that was just the name of the game. Like, it was one word. Banjo-Kazooie.
Mm-hmm.
It just rolls off the tongue. And, yeah, basically, I think these two built this sort of mascot genre.
Yeah.
I know Donkey Kong came first and everything. But it's not this like kind of playfulness. They just play with each other, like you said. Like she squawks at him, and he's just like,
yeah. It's the stereotypical married couple of those kind of eras, whether it be from the 90s or 80s or all the way back in the 50s. There's something there you can kind of feel it, and that's what I've always looked at them that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you for bringing it back around. Where it's like if that makes sense to all these people. It's like of course they're a married couple, right? Right? Right?
You all know the Honeymooners. You all are big fans of the 1950 show Honeymooners.
Yeah. To the moon, John, to the moon. Spousal abuse.
That's what I was going to say. That's all I know from that show is spousal abuse.
It is. He never followed through on it. He just threatened her.
There's the key. A raised fist is fine. Just don't bring it down.
Yes, exactly.
God.
Oh,
can
man.
We move on?
Yeah, we can move on. It's a good episode.
Number one, of course. Actually, is this an of course? I want to know before we really announce it. Do you think it's wrong?
I don't think it's wrong that Wario and Waluigi are number one. I don't think it's wrong at all. It makes sense. I mean, ever since Mario Tennis, it's like, guys, stop. This is Nintendo's ultimate duo right here.
Trace comes into my room one day. He's like, so when are we getting that Waluigi game?
I know, right? We should do a whole topic of like, what would our Waluigi game be? What would our Wario and Waluigi game would be? Because it can't be like these other Italian brothers. Who gives a shit about them? But it's like, what kind of game would we structure around those two iconic Nintendo characters? I mean, what would you do? Be crazy. It can't be just a 2D
scratch platform. Robbery game.
Yeah, I like that. Oh, it's like GTA. Like it's like Nintendo's
art,
GTA.
Like art theft of some sort. Because like, doesn't Wario love art?
He loves art. He loves treasure. I think Waluigi would also love treasure too.
He loves onions. We said last episode, he loves eating ass.
Apparently, I love farting on things. Yeah, I think it would be kind of a heist game. Yeah. That'd be really fun.
That'd actually be good.
It would be.
TM.
But it's, but these characters on my Nintendo, we're going to try to mock them.
But yes, it's actually Mario and Luigi.
Oh, yeah.
The normal ones. Mm-hmm. Luigi's the original second player. So, forever, he's always tied to that kind of thing until Mario's missing. You want to bring up Mario's missing on the I think it was just on the computer. You might know that game? Or maybe it was CDI.
I'm just thinking of
Luigi's Mansion.
Luigi's Mansion.
I know, but I was just the game Mario's missing.
Oh, I never played that. I never heard of it until just now.
Oh, Chris.
Yeah.
There's so many
Mario games, man.
That is true. There's the regulars, then there's Paper, and specifically Mario and Luigi. Mm-hmm. They have their own RPG franchise. Great RPGs, by the way. I think there's 7 in the series. There's Superstar Saga, Partners in Time, which we brought this up off mic because we were thinking Mario and Yoshi, and we brought up Mario and Baby Mario and Yoshi, but
Super Mario World and stuff like that.
Partners in Time is where I thought, okay, so Baby Mario is Yoshi, so it'd essentially be the same one.
Yeah.
Bowser's Inside Story, great game.
It's a good game.
Dream Team, which came out in 2013, and the most recent one is Mario and Luigi Paper Jam, which kind of mixes Paper Mario.
Mario RPG Luigi stuff together. In there. That's cool.
But yeah, they have, outside of Luigi being the original second player, they have their own series together in which some of their personalities come out. Like the personality you see of Luigi being a scared little wimp and Luigi's missing, he kind of carries that into the Mario and Luigi games, and he feels second fiddle. I think Dream Team even kind of plays into that, where you're in Luigi's dreams and you see him dreaming of being the hero, Mario, and it's kind of like,
that's feel sorry nice. For him. Yeah, I do you, feel you, sorry for Luigi. That's
the thing is, over when did the original Mario come out? 87, 88.
I think it was even earlier than that.
85.
Yeah, it was in the mid 80s.
From there to now. These two, I like Luigi more, honestly.
Well, because you feel for him. Because he has always been kind of the second fiddle. It's always Luigi.
Yeah. At this point, he's the one that has personality. Remember Nintendo's Year of Luigi back in 2015?
That. I mean, you're absolutely right about that. Because, Mario's just like, what defines Mario? Nothing. Luigi, it's like, at least he's scared. He's unsure of himself. I mean, that's something.
Yeah. He can jump higher.
Yeah.
That's the ever since, even in Mario 2, straight from the outset, we started to see them starting to get differentiated. So the original Mario Brothers and then Super Mario Brothers, he was just a palette swap of Mario. But as time has grown, eventually this could be a whole Luigi episode. But
we can do a whole Luigi
episode. We could. We're going to do a Yoshi episode.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
But he's just, from Super Mario Brothers 2, he then kind of had a definition, Mario is boring. He's the all-around guy. He's good at everything.
He's the everyman. He's good enough.
He's good enough at everything.
Yep.
Whereas Luigi is bad at some things, but he can jump higher, and he... I mean, that is a trademark
feature. Scared of ghosts.
He's scared of ghosts, but hey, that's the thing.
He's brave enough to fight them.
He does. Mm-hmm. And who's he fighting for?
Mario. Save his brother. He's like, yep, he's an asshole, but I gotta save him. He's my bro.
And I think that's why I had to put them up at the top two. It's like, they've been together since birth. Like, mm-hmm. They are brothers, and they've been in movies together. They have.
Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo. Oh, man, that's a great film.
They've been in comics together. They've been in multiple series together. I don't know. They are the original duo of mm-hmm. video games. They yep. are the Mario brothers, and I think I don't know. I think that's all I had to say really on them. It's just like, who else could it be? I would love to hear you guys tell us, but like, Chris, you got anything to say on them?
I'm still waiting for that Wario and Waluigi game. Just can't wait for it. It's going to happen. I wanted to include them on this list, but
I'm just glad we had another reason to bring up the eating ass joke.
Eating ass.
That had me just like dying mm-hmm. when I was recording last episode. But we can't.
Good joke, John.
I know you wanted to end it on that, but we have to do plugs.
No, I was gonna get to the plugs. Okay. But hey, John, how can people follow you?
Where? On Twitter?
On Twitter, yeah. Didn't you say ad?
It's like you find, John. You find whatever. Where I work, and then you find my car. Just follow me. This is why we're number zero. We're that special parallel universe dynamic duo.
Oh, is it? Yeah, that is why we're number zero. We're infinite.
But you can follow me at @JohnRomo, no mm-hmm. H.
Yeah, and you can follow me at Chris J. Herman. You can follow We Are Error at We Are Error Cast. Now, of course, you know, you listen to We Are Error. It's a great show. One of the best shows, I think, on the internet, on the interwebs.
Wow, bold.
I'm going to say it right now. So, of the video game kind of side. You know,
Still a bold ass claim.
I think we're up there. You know, we got great chemistry. We're a great duo, of course. But there's a lot of other great content on oneofus.net. Of course, you have Digital Noise, our Blu-ray review podcast. You have Somebody Likes It, our music podcast. Thumbtacks and Screwjobs, our wrestling podcast. You even have like two horror podcasts. I mean, that's amazing. Deliberations of Doom and Screamcast, plus Highly Suspect Reviews, where we're reviewing movies. We're putting out those movie reviews every single week. That's great content. Then we also have a lot of our subscriber content, which we're continuously developing. All of our movie commentaries are going to be going up. Just pay a fee every month. You get access to all this cool stuff. And then, of course, what else do we do, John?
You're being so humble. Right. But you forgot to mention the Conclave.
I can't believe I forgot.
It's a project in the works, but Chris got to host the first episode, mm-hmm. Kind of discussing the latest... latest trailers. In this instance was the newest trailer, first trailer for Star Wars: The Last Jedi, in which Chris tried to gather together some of the brightest minds and nerdiest minds in this whole Star Wars universe, or you know, people who care to talk about this.
Yeah, pretty much
universe.
Yeah, yeah.
For 35 minutes.
Oh, it went on for a long in the 3-5. It was like just under an hour, man. Damn.
If you want to pull an hour's worth of content out of a 2-minute and 56 second trailer. Chris Herman's your man.
Talking about Grand Admiral Thrawn and the Nogri.
See, like, I'm so glad I'm on that. But not least, I want to mention one more time. We did an interview recently with Christopher Randolph. Mm-hmm. You guys may know him from Otacon, but he's also done stuff with the Sonnet Project, like Sonnet 48. He's done some Shakespearean work. That's why he was here. Yep. And we got the opportunity to sit down and talk to him about, you know, his time in the theater, his time, you know, working on the video games, and how to make blueberry pie. And I still cannot believe that happened. And I can't believe what came out of that, which is me and Chris will get to host a panel at DreamHack Austin on April 29th, 9:30, I believe, mm-hmm. Talking about the evolutions of games, media, again, magazines, YouTube, podcasts, where it's going to go in the future, documentary, stuff like that. Essentially, kind of like, how are we going to document this stuff, I think?
Yeah.
And how have we done it in the past? So if you are in the city, you know, go check out the con. I think it's $35 for a day pass, but it's like a full day. Like, it's a 24-hour convention. That convention does not shut down. We'll be there. I know I'll be there. I'll at least check out a couple of the tournaments and see what people are playing. And just kind of try and get some buzz going for us. Like, we got to get hype.
Absolutely.
And also look out for some future interviews from us too. We're reaching out to developers. We want to get to talk about them and let their voices be heard. And hopefully you do too. So.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to know the secrets that the crystal holds and all the magic power that it brings. I'm the big kahuna. I should know what's going on. Inka Dinka, tell me everything.